This is Andy Pagg podcasting for xcmag.com on day three of the rat race. It's the 25th of June and Groundhog Day again here for the third day running, still no flying. Bad weather day again today. But one group of people that are carrying on their activities are the people involved in what's called the Super Clinic. And to find out a little bit about the Super Clinic, I spoke to Ken Hudon-Jorgensen.
So there are three of us that are operating the Super Clinic, myself, Carrie Castle, and Kate Tauscher. And we are basically trying to get newer pilots up to speed in terms of being able to do cross-country and thermaling. And so the whole clinic is about getting people to gather the skills, garner the skills for themselves in order to be able to do that as safely and efficiently as possible. And so we're doing things like helping them learn about small, unexplored landing fields, obstructed landing fields, how to have a better launch technique so their launches are under control, and give them an enthusiastic start for their cross-country flight. What kind of strategies to use for cross-country and what kind of altitudes they need for certain glides. Just all the details that they need to know, how to read clouds, how to use lift. It includes a thermal clinic also, meaning they're going to learn how to effectively use thermals and how to sense where lift and sink is affecting their wing so that they can deduce from that where the edge of the thermal is, where the core or the stronger part of the thermal is, and be able to effectively execute a directional heading that takes them to that stronger part of the thermal that they're looking for so that they go up higher and faster.
That sounds really good. I want to come and join you. One of the things that I'm guessing that you're also helping with them is with confidence as well. And so having a thermaling clinic like the one you're running right next to a competition where you've got pilots of all levels right the way up to the top, is that helpful or a hindrance?
Very helpful.
There's no sort of sense of intimidation from watching the top pilots taking off or anything like that?
No, a lot of times it's very helpful because they can watch some of these pilots that are supposed to be some of the best pilots in the country blow launches and end up all over the place while they're trying to launch, and they'll say, well, I could do that.
That's a funny thing. Actually, I remember my first rat race competition. I came here and everyone was flying, I think it was R11s at the time, and notoriously difficult to launch. And I remember sitting there as a novice pilot thinking, geez, these guys are supposed to be the best pilots. Look at the way their launch is going.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it quite a popular, is it proved to be quite popular? Have you got quite a few students signed up?
We have 21 or 22 that are part of it, and that's a good number for us. We would be able to handle more. But this is our first time really doing this, and so as a first-time thing, it's awesome. That's a great number.
And I'm guessing you run thermaling clinics and things like this, but not alongside a full-blown clinic.
Yeah, at my home site, where I teach and all that, yeah.
And I was going to ask you another thing. I mean, the weather hasn't been great over the last 3 days. Has that slowed you down, or have you been able to find...
No, it actually helps us, because there's so many things for newer people. There's so many things that we have to go over and they have to understand mentally. And so it allows us to stay on the ground and not have people like looking up at the sky, jonesing to fly because it's raining or it's cloud cover. And they know they can't really fly anyway. So then they're paying more attention. Right. So I actually love it when I get clinics like this where the weather is bad at first and we can't fly. Uh-huh. It helps me keep their attention. And it allows us to learn the things on the ground that we need to learn on the ground before we fly.
And so one of the things I was wondering, when the weather does turn good, how are you going to manage the flying? Is it going to be before the main comp? Because there's only really one takeoff here. So you're going to be flying before the main comp or after it or a bit of both?
We'll do some of both, yeah. So there's some days we'll go before and other days we'll go after, and some days we'll do both. And the confidence thing is important. I want to go back to that a little bit. And one of the things that helps people with confidence is to learn more about what they're doing. A lot of times when people start thermaling or cross country, it's kind of a roll of the dice what they learn. And they're just kind of putting themselves out there and see what happens and try to figure it out. Whereas with this, we do these ground school drills that help them understand how to read thermal activity and what they're going to feel in their body. We use the simulator also, and how they should respond to what they feel in their body and in their hands while they're flying, and what the communication is from the wing about the parcel of air that's flying through. And when they learn the language of the wing, they understand more. And you gain more confidence when you understand more about what it is you're doing. And if people don't understand the language of the wing, they end up just being confused. There's this babbling going on that they don't understand. And so they just, they lack confidence. And it really is like learning another language. It's like, you know, going to, you know, an African country and you're the only one in the tribe who doesn't speak the language. It's very confusing at first. And you don't have much confidence in your ability to survive there and have social interactions there. But once you learn the language, your confidence comes back, you feel good. And we're learning the same thing with our wings. We're learning the wing's language so that we can not only just understand it, but we can then, in response to what the wing tells us about the parcel of air that it's flying through, we can communicate back to the wing what we want it to do in order for us to effectively use that parcel of air that it's flying through to create efficiency, altitude, speed, distance, all the things that we want for thermaling and cross country.
That's great. That really, it really does sound like a great course. And finally, you're only almost halfway through with the group. Are you getting a sense that they're kind of keen to put the skills that they're learning to test in competition? Because I know that Mike Haley, the organizer of the Rat Race, his vision of having the super clinic running alongside the competition is that pilots will eventually kind of go from the cross country clinic to joining the competition and progress their learning through competitions. Are you getting a sense of that kind of dual, those two events sitting alongside each other, that's rubbing off on the pilots in your class?
Oh yeah, definitely. They are hungry. They want more. They want more information, but they also are hungry to fly and apply. And that's awesome. As long as they don't get too hungry and get greedy. Greed is almost always the thing that hurts us in this sport, some kind of greed. And so hopefully they don't get greedy, but they all seem like very reasonable people, and they're concerned about their own well-being, and they realize that they're doing this for fun. And so I think they'll apply it really beautifully and well, but they are hungry to apply it and see what they have learned. And so over the next 3-4 days, they will be applying it, and they always find that they are applying it awesomely. And they understand so much more, and people are just so pleased and so excited. Usually in 3 days of doing this, people will progress by about 3 years' worth of flying on their own. So it's an awesome thing. They're great drills. It's a great course. And we get 8 days, so they're going to really progress a lot.
That's great. Well, thanks very much for your time, and good luck with the rest of the course. Hopefully the weather's going to work as you want it over the next few days as well.
Yeah, it's going in our favor.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So while we're all grounded, I had a chat with Andrew Berkeley, and his story really is a lesson that things don't get dangerous in paragliding until you get on the ground. Now, I have to warn you, if you're easily offended by the F word, then you're going to be offended numerous times by the following story.
Well, I was having a wonderful flight. There was a practice task, which was sort of interesting, and the day sort of shut down a little earlier, or early in the sense that I wasn't at goal yet. And so I was ridge soaring somewhere, and I chose a very nice landing field. As usual, you choose something without horses, without livestock, without crops, and it was a super nice landing field. And I go and I put my glider down perfectly, and as soon as my glider is on the ground, I turn around and kill it. The brakes are still in my hand, and this guy on a quad, holding a shotgun, waving around, yelling, "Get off my land."
So he'd seen you coming into land already, and he was already coming.
He was
coming
already
over
on
him.
His quad. And as my wing hit the ground, basically like a second later, he drives his quad right over it, does a donut on it.
And you're clipped in still?
I'm still clipped in. And he's just going on. You know, and I understand people wanting me not to be on their land, and that's all fine. Driving over my wing may be a little bit much.
So was it, I presume it was pretty damaged?
Yeah, it was pretty significantly damaged. And
what's the repair bill? Do you know yet?
Not yet. I sent it off to be looked at.
And so
this guy's obviously in a bit of an emotional mess. And, you know, I'm a very calm guy. even in the case when someone drives over my wing. But
probably more shocked than anything as a reaction. Really?
Yeah, that's basically what I thought. I was just, this is unbelievable. And it, so he's on a quad with a shotgun holder on the front with the shotgun in it, and he's just flipping out. And I'm apologizing. I'm from Canada. We're pretty good at doing that, and you know. But he's,
and I guess you don't, I don't know, do you have the same sort of gun culture here in Canada? Do people normally come out on their quad bikes with their shotguns when you land in Canada?
I have never run into this in any place I've flown. I usually, you land and someone may come out and be a little bit confused. You know, what are you doing camping on my land or
right.
things like that? I've had that.
Yeah.
And it's
right.
like, oh, and you explain it. And people are just, you know, in rural parts, people are so nice most of the time. Mm. You meet the greatest people. Flying cross country is, you know, it's a full adventure, not just the flying, but the getting back. And a wonderful thing to do. So there are a lot of positives. Shouldn't worry about this happening very often. So this, the guy is there, and he's on my wing with his quad, and he's busy threatening me and sort of trying to advance the quad on me, but he's sitting on a pile of nylon, which doesn't give a lot of friction. So the wing is getting sucked up into the wheels, and of course I'm attached.
Yeah.
I'm attached to the wing, so I'm getting like sucked into the quad. And I'm like, you know, I think he's understanding that it's getting a little absurd. And I'm sort of saying, hey, stop, I'm attached to this thing. And so he does actually stop.
Right.
And I think he realizes, he tries to get the wing out of the wheels. It's all entire, like the whole quad is like caught up in wing. And, you know, he's getting frustrated. He's pulling at it, trying to back up and go forward. Basically, he's caught on my wing with his quad, which is just, maybe the humor got to him eventually.
In a way, comic yeah. scene if it wasn't so.
Yeah, it was. If it wasn't for the gun on his quad, I think it would have been quite amusing.
And for the damage to your wing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, go on.
So, you know, eventually he seems to calm down a bit. I'm like, okay, he tries to take out a knife. He takes out a knife to go and cut the wing away. I'm like, whoa, it's okay. I'll detach the wing from your quad. Which
will take me a lot longer to get off your land than it would have
been. So it was a quite involved procedure, you know, getting it detached. But he sort of calmed down enough that once it was detached, he just sort of drove off into the corner and I left.
And just left you to pack up and get out of it.
Well, I just carried my wing off the land, got out as soon as possible. I was right near the road anyway.
And so what's the latest story then? Have the police been involved?
Yep. So I thanks to some help from the local club, I've been talking to the sheriff's office because obviously destroying someone's property and, well, threatening them and all those sort of things and jerking someone around, even though it was via the lines, is not something
and
that...
And waving a gun around as well.
It's not an acceptable, you know, behavior. So we're hoping to get the police involved and make sure that this guy understands he can't really do this. Yeah, he can be mad about someone landing on his land, and I can understand that. But of course, it's criminal charges are a little bit hard to get to stick because it's basically there were no witnesses except me and him.
Yeah, presumably you got some damage to your
wing. Oh yeah, there's definitely damage to my wing, but it doesn't, you know, say whether he did it intentionally or not.
Tire tracks across there.
Yeah, it's so. But that's not the important part. The important part is to make sure that people behave like people. And
yeah. Well, that's very kind of magnanimous and generous spirited of you. I'm sure a lot of pilots I know wouldn't react with such a charitable opinion. And so, in terms of like getting a new wing, you're just going to have to stump up whatever the bill is and get a new wing.
Almost brand new wing too.
Oh no, what was it?
It was a Peak 3.
Oh yeah, well it can't be that old.
yeah.
Oh no.
I had put on 50 hours on it in the last month or so, so it was all right.
So you're just kind of getting in, bedding it in.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, you might know. In fact, actually, here comes Paul. Paul, tell us the story about Ranger.
The attack llama.
The attack llama.
Yeah.
This is just another example of how dangerous
it's
flying.
Dangerous. It's a dangerous world in Southern Oregon.
You've
got marijuana farmers.
So before you start, Paul is the president of the local RVHPA club here.
Yeah, nobody else would take the position.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
Yeah.
They can't
Ranger,
best of the crop if they pinch you.
No. I mean, look, I'm 50. My life is going downhill. And so that I grabbed this last piece of self-esteem building.
Well, there's some personal miseries aside. Tell us about Ranger, the attack.
Oh, didn't make up your mind. What do you want to know? I mean, Jesus, you had started there and then you went somewhere else. So, yeah, Ranger. Ranger's an attack llama. It's he's sexually repressed.
Right.
And
from a flying perspective, why is this relevant to pilots?
Well, because you land in a field, and I think most people think that a llama is, you know, a heroic figure.
A sweet, docile animal that kind of nibbles gently on grass.
Yeah, or a sweet, docile animal. And Ranger was not sweet or docile.
There are a lot of llamas. I should have just explained, there are a lot of llamas in this valley, presumably for wool, or what do they do with the llamas?
I think they're lawn ornaments, primarily.
Right. Oh, okay.
I think they're like the, you know, the Holland tulip.
People keep farm them. Yeah.
Llamas, they ranch them actually. Farm is what comes out of the ground. But no, you're a city boy. It's okay.
So as English American, Atlantic divide. Then, but carry on.
No. That's great. So so llamas are used as protection for herd animals. So if a llama were to see a giant pterodactyl fall out of the sky in its field, that it's sworn duty is to protect, then yeah, the llama comes after you, and you're not really sure the intent of the llama, but a male llama is pretty fierce. I mean, have you seen them?
They can be quite tall.
They're tall and aggressive. I mean, not unlike some of the bars around here. You know, there's a lot of swaggering, and llamas spit. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh, really?
But yeah. Serious. That's one of their things.
I mean, apart from being unpleasant, it's not like some sort of acid spit that's going to...
Listen, do you want llama phlegm all over your gear? Because if you do, I know the English are different. I know the English are completely
between
different.
Between having someone shoot at me and drive over my
wing,
you didn't
give me that option. You did not. That option was not out there. You just said, would you like llama spit? And in point of fact, no, I don't want llama spit.
So as a local pilot, is there any tips that you can give visiting pilots that come to Southern Oregon in the Rogue Valley to fly in order to avoid these kind of ground hazards?
At this point, no. Well, at this point, yes, make goal.
Right. Yeah, because that's a
pretty
safe thing. And
beyond that, no. But when Andrew's thing is done, you know, I think we have educated the sheriff, and I think that, you know, this valley is small enough that this is not the first incident, and I think word will get around.
Right.
So, you know, that's what I'm hoping.
I mean, I'm not for a minute suggesting that this fellow was doing anything illegal on his property, which is, and react, well,
well he was.
No, but I don't know what he was growing in his garden. But
I don't think he was growing. You can usually tell a pot farmer. I don't think he's a pot farmer.
Oh, okay.
I think he's just
an
asshole.
Angry man. Right.
And so, and we have those here.
Oh, okay.
they're free range.
Right.
And so... You know, I think the best advice is, seriously, in all seriousness, the best advice is you land, actually what Andrew did, you know, you land in a fallow field, there's no crop growing in it currently, there's, you know, it's close to a main road, so these aren't the backwoods sort of scary hillbillies, and there's no livestock. They don't really have that much reason to be that agitated.
Angry, yeah.
But it's really hard to pick out psychopaths from the air.
And there was a story of Wade Holmes that landed. Yeah. He had a small clue that maybe he was landing in a bad field.
You know, yeah, so he landed in a field. And Wade, I'm fairly sure, speaks English.
Right.
And I know he can read and write, at least in some language.
Yeah.
But the guy had mowed in his field the words fuck off.
Right.
Which, you know, if you're
from
coming,
air,
considering that it's only visible to people from the air, you would think that this is a message for people in the air to fuck off. And if you can't fuck off to his satisfaction, there's going to be some problems when you get down. So perhaps Wade did not fuck off
to the degree that he was expected
to fuck off.
I see.
So when he landed, the fellow thought that he would educate Wade.
And just how much he needed him to fuck off.
The fucking off was really something that, fulfilled him.
I'm going to spend all night with the beat button.
Yeah, whatever. And so why are you recording this?
No, that's why I'm holding my phone.
Whatever. I don't know what you do at night. So the guy decided to educate Wade by driving at him with a front-end loader.
And a front-end loader in English, what would that be?
A big thing with four wheels and a bucket.
In a bucket. Oh, I think
John Deere.
Like a JCB digger. A digger. Is it? Anyway, we get the general idea.
A digger. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, my mistake. Not a front-end loader, as per the manual. It's a digger. So, it's a big thing, and right, drove straight at Wade. I believe the story was that Wade had to jump. Wade was now on public property. He was on the public right-of-way, Highway 238, and this guy came after him with his front-end loader. And tried to run him down. And so Wade jumped over the fence, and the guy ran over Wade's camelback, which, under the weight of a front-end loader, was a remarkable physics experiment. It was fully inflated with water.
Not afterwards, presumably.
No, not afterwards.
Okay, it was a small damage, considering how that sounds like that could have been a nasty situation.
So here's my serious advice is avoid animals at all costs. Land close to a road. Avoid what looks like to be a small and struggling, if vibrant, but like they only have 12. It looks like Christmas trees.
Right.
And they come in
packs of 12.
They're not six packs. They're packs of 12. A card is 12.
Oh, God. So just to explain, there's a lot of people that grow medical marijuana, and they get a medical marijuana card for 12
plants. And they are sick. There are a lot of sick people in the world. They are doing...
And they don't necessarily like people landing in there.
They hate people landing there.
And so the guy that had mowed fuck off into his lawn, presumably that was aimed more at the federal government helicopters that fly overhead rather than paragliders.
Not presumably, but specifically. He did not like the eyes in the air. He's not a big drone, unmanned or manned fan. Thus the fuck off. Thus the you would think somebody flying might think... Not a good field.
A different field, yeah. Okay, that's great. Thank you, guys. And good luck, Andrew, getting your wing repaired.
Thanks a lot.
So listening back to that story, it does make it sound like the Applegate Valley is the Wild West. But actually, these incidents are very, very rare. I think there's been 3 reported incidents. In fact, this is the 3rd reported incident in as many years of something like this happening. And the district attorney is now involved in the case. The hope is that they make an example of this guy and word spreads through the valley to prevent any further incidents like this happening. So on that, I don't know if it's a happy or a sad note, but on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. A reminder that if you want to send me any questions, you can do that via Twitter using hashtag XCMag or by email at andy@andypag.com, andypag.com.